Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I'm your host, Valerie Parker. I'm a businesswoman, author, and speaker. I've written 4 books, the first, From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt. Secondly, Unveiling Secrets from the Heart, Forgiving Your Past to Free Your Future. And then Restored Vessels, Young Adults Overcoming Adversities. Now, with this book here, those of you that are listening, I highly recommend this book to young adults. You know, so many young people are going through oppositions in their life right now. And in light of all that's been going on with the Trayvon Martin case, this book is a must-read for a lot of young adults. And also my 4th book, Unveiling Unlimited Possibilities, The Roadmap to Restoration. I'm so proud of those books that I've written because they've written from the heart. And we're going to continue on with our show from last week, Become the Change. We're doing part 2. This should become the change. But right now, I have a couple of announcements. This Friday, April 13th, we will be in Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area at the Sheraton Washington North with the Fight for Your Dreams tour. That's April 13th at 7 p.m. We will be doing the Fight for Your Dreams tour, and we'll be featuring some of the speakers such as Alan McDougall, Lyndia Grant, Charles Phillips, Wayne Randolph, Eloise Frazier, Cheryl Nix, Star Babatun, and we'll be hearing from them. If any of the speakers are on the line, please press 1 so that we can talk about the upcoming Fight for Your Dreams event that will be held in Baltimore this Friday, and also Les Brown will be joining us on that. So we're going to go right into the show. Well, last week we talked about becoming the change. And we were sharing with Captain Mark Stevenson, J.R. Thicklin, co-host Shirley Carter. Shirley is out tonight, but she will be joining us next week. And everybody gave some very, very valuable information and insight as to this case with Trayvon Martin. And also I brought up Dan Roy Henry, the case that affected my son a couple of years ago, and the racial profiling that's going on. And now in the news I hear that Zimmerman is missing. So I have 0363, that's Cheryl holding.
Yes.
Hello, Cheryl. Nix, how are you?
Hi, Valerie. I'm good.
I'm so glad you joined us. You know, last week we had such a powerful show, and I know you do a lot of work with young people. I know you're familiar with the Trayvon Martin case. Has it affected your community in New Orleans?
There have been marches and rallies. One of the high schools here, the students put on the, you know, We Are Trayvon march and rally. So it's just like the things that's going on all over the country. Same thing is going on here. But we also had the week before Trayvon, we had a similar incident here where a 20-year-old was, the police burst into the house and he stepped out of the room. They claimed they were looking for drugs, and he stepped out of the room with no shirt on, and they shot him in the heart in front of his two-year-old, four-year-old, and 11-year-old siblings. So, yeah.
Wow. You know, I said last week that sacrifices have constantly gone up, but somehow because of this young man's death, it has sparked a fire in a lot of individuals. Now, you're going to be a part of the Fight for Your Dreams tour this Friday and at the Sheraton Washington North. I'm so excited to hear what you have to say. We were on Stacey N.C. Grant's show the other day, and we were talking. We had Lyndia Grant on there, and she was talking about, she was going to talk about Follow the Yellow Brick Road. And And Alan McDougall gave some insights on what he's going to be sharing. What about you, Cheryl? Fighting for your dream. What? Give us some nuggets. Don't give them a lot of stuff because we want them to buy tickets. But just
yes.
give them some insight on Cheryl Nixon, what she's going to be doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to give a little insight on my childhood and adversities I had to overcome, which I believe caused me to become stronger and more determined to fight for my dreams. So that's what I'll be talking about, fighting for my dreams and overcoming adversities.
And also, you're a poet.
Yes, I am. And I will share a poem.
You will share
a
poem
training,
with me
not,
that night?
Yeah.
And do you have any
yes.
products or services?
Yes, I do. I have a poetry book, Poems for the Heart with Steps to Grow By, and a poetry CD with the same title on Amazon. And each one of my poems contain action steps for personal growth. So they're inspirational poems, but also food for thought for personal growth. And I also am one of the co-authors of the Fight for Your Dream book, The Power of Never Giving Up, with Mr. Les Brown.
And how can they reach that? Because this is a national program, so how can individuals that won't be have the opportunity to join us on Friday, how can they get access to you?
They can go to my website, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-O-Y-L, Nix, N-I-C-K-S, enterprises.com. And my products are on my website.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I also have joining me, Mark, are you there? Captain Mark.
Captain Mark in Chicago. Valerie Parker, how are you doing?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. You know, we had such an exciting time last week speaking on this subject, and one of the things that you talked about was the fact that you were a business owner, and well, you can do a recap for those that missed last week's show.
Do you mean that when I said that if I have a young man that comes to my door with a hoodie on and his pants hanging down, I straighten him out at the front door or turn him around?
Right.
Well, I experienced that probably an hour ago. Prior to closing up my store for today, then absolutely everyone is not going to take it the same way, and they're not going to take it. The fact is that as I tell all of them, I love them very much. I greet them with the Arabic word.
I'm losing you. Your volume is slow.
I greet them with the Arabic words of peace, assalamu alaikum, and I try my best to show them that I love them. But I will not allow them in my presence. I will not allow them in my place of business with their hood on and with their pants hanging down, because I have to make sure they know I want to have them dressed as a prospect and not a suspect.
Yeah, I know some people were kind of off balance, upset last week when you said that, but then when you began to break it down, and I know I start from my own personal situations, if someone were to be approaching me and say it's a dark street and they have a hood on and the pants are hanging and I see the bling bling, I would be kind of intimidated by them as well.
Kind of intimidated? Let's look at it from the other side. Let's look at it for a second from the other side of the mirror. You opened up today's call, Valerie, by saying that Mr. Zimmerman has disappeared. And you also made the statement that the actions that he did has awakened a community. Well, you're absolutely wrong that he has disappeared. He's quite visible, and you're absolutely right that he's waking up a community. What do I mean by that? He has disappeared to the public's eye, but today I woke up to the news hearing that Mr. Zimmerman has a website set up for donations. There are people who believe that what he did was right, and he has motivated. He has woken up a white community across this nation, and they are thinking that he has done the right thing for his community, and so they are giving him money for housing. They are giving him money for his transportation, and yeah, to hide his physical self out. There's a lot of people who are supporting him. So the other side of the coin shows quite clearly that a people is awakened, but I do believe that it's not the people that you're thinking of. I think that he has awakened a white population to think that they can get away with it. To this day, he is still not charged with anything.
Absolutely. Charlie, are you still holding?
Did you say Cheryl?
Yes, Cheryl. What are your thoughts and comments on this thing? You know, I gave my opinion here, Mark giving his. You know, Hot Topics from the Soul is a platform so that we can voice and be able to say what we feel and what we're thinking, and it's safe ground. Because we can always, you know, choose to agree or disagree, but at least the voices will be heard so that, you know, different sides will be weighed to give a new perspective or better outlook on exactly what's going on in our communities and how we can better become the change that needs to happen in our communities.
Yes, Val. I don't feel it's about the hoodies. I coming up in the 50s and experiencing racism firsthand, you know, I remember the signs that said white only. I remember not being able to go to certain places. And so I experienced it firsthand, and I feel since Barack Obama has been in office, I feel like I'm back in the 60s sometimes. I have never, ever seen a president so disrespected ever before. And so I don't believe it's about the hoodies. I believe it's pure racism. I believe it's about skin color. And as far as our young men with the hoods and the gold teeth and the bling bling, I'm not intimidated by them. I pass by them. I speak to them. Even before Katrina washed away the projects here, you know, I'd go in projects. And, you know, I just don't fear our youth now. Some people may. But as long as you show them that you care about them, all the youth want is for somebody to care about them. And when we start, so where do we stop? Okay, don't wear a hood. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't. Where does it end? You know. And to just give you an example, anybody who knows me knows I've been wearing scarves for the past 10 years. You know, that's my signature. That's what I like doing. That's my look, and that's me. I was in the credit union a week ago. And standing in line, my eyes were not covered, and the security guard came up to me. He said, don't shoot the messenger, but you're going to have to remove your scarf.
What?
So, yes. Okay, so I didn't say anything. He said, or slide it back. I said, well, I'll slide it back a little bit, and I did. So I thought about it for a minute as I stood in line. So I went up to him, and I asked him, okay, what do you all say to Muslim women or other women who wear head wraps? He said, well, that's part of their religion. I said, well, how do you know my scarf isn't part of my religion? He said, well, you could have told me. And so it's all about, you know, judging, perception, you know, where does it end? So I don't, you know, think it's about, I just think it's underlying racism, and that's my point on that.
Well, I absolutely believe that it is racial discrimination. And, you know, we're oftentimes judged by the color of our skin more so than the countenance of our character. You know, you can look at someone most times and know by their persona, their spirit, if they're enemy or friend.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, this being a young child, you mean to tell me you couldn't determine if that was a young child? I think that in this particular case, I think he went out looking for a fight. But, and then cowered down at the end and felt that he needed to use his weapon because he started a fight he didn't feel that he can finish. And
yeah.
therefore, we have a young man's life that was taken, but it has awakened a community. It has awakened for the good or the bad. It has awakened. It has awakened the our Caucasian brothers and sisters as well. You know, and some of them are for it, and some of them are against them. You know, Captain Mark, not all of our Caucasian community is backing him, because the bottom line is we have just as many Caucasian teenagers that are looking thuggish and very intimidating too. They got these where they dressing like goths, where they're black, everything is black, black fingernails, black eyes, red lipstick. That's intimidating. But we're not shooting them. We're not pulling knives and killing them. But yet they feel necessary, because of our skin color, to act aggressively.
Absolutely. It sounds as if you're talking about my daughter, who wears her and her friends with this black fingernail polish, the males and females, but they're in this gothic world. A little bit different. They're a little bit different than what they're trying to do. But the thing is that you have to emulate when you are, and the theme of this call is making the difference or being the example. I'm hearing that out of you, that what we need to do is set the pattern, be the example, be the change, and the change is in dressing and looking a way that we say so much more with our nonverbal communication than we do with our verbal communication. And so people within the first few seconds of seeing us have already made some 20 judgments or more about what they think we are about, the amount of money we make and our demeanor and so forth. They're looking at our body language, and that speaks volumes. So we have to teach our young people on how to communicate nonverbally, just as importantly as teaching them verbal communication skills.
Absolutely.
Dressing is a major part of that.
I have a call waiting on last digits 8227. Call, are you there?
I am here. Hi, Valerie. It's Jonathan J. Dog Letterman.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very intrigued by the whole perspective of things, and I wanted to share with your listeners, you know, something that happened to me at a young age. I was living in Davie, Florida at the time. I was, I think, one of two Jewish kids in my school, and I think we might have had three, and I'll be politically correct, Afro-Americans at our school, and I made friends with one of them, and we were crossing the bridge one day, and unfortunately, some of the, and I hate to use the term redneck kids, but they decided to jump us. And unfortunately, they burnt Sean's eyes. They pummeled
wow.
me pretty bad. And Sean was without his eyebrows until they grew back for like 3 weeks. And he wasn't blinded. They just burnt his eyebrows. But it was a sad situation. I think it's a, you know, you would think here we are in 2012, like or dislike our president, you would have thought we made these inroads, that these prejudices about, you know, somebody making fun of you because you're Jewish, or somebody making fun of you because you're black, or somebody making fun of you because you're Chinese, would have gone a long way. You know, my view on the whole Trayvon Martin case is it's a tragic set of circumstances, and it's a bad commentary. You know, I wasn't there. All I know is what we're seeing on the news. All I know is what Zimmerman's former legal counsel, former lawyers, are
right.
saying. You know, we don't know what happened. We don't know if Trayvon was provoked and was fearful. Here, you know, 260-pound guy coming after you, questioning you. And, you know, it's interesting you bring up the idea of the hoodie. I do a lot of collecting for the American Cancer Society, and I have a American Cancer Society Relay for Life hoodie that I earned for raising money. And I did a video of me wearing the hoodie. It was a cold night in South Florida. And it is interesting the looks that you get. And again, the prejudging you when you walk into a business, and I'll share a quick anecdote here too, is I went out dressed in a, you know, American Cancer Society T-shirt, pair of jeans, my Relay for Life baseball cap, walked into the neighborhood doing business to business to collect donations, and collected, I think, $36 in a couple of hours. A couple of weeks later, maybe about a month later, I went into that same neighborhood, but this time I put on a collared American Cancer Society shirt, a pair of slacks, still with the ball cap to identify myself, and in the same period of time in the same businesses, collected $72. So it's unfortunate that we do get judged on the clothes that we wear. We get judged on the way that we look, and it's unfortunate. I do a lot of work with the Pop Warner Football League in Lauderhill, Florida, and it is a predominantly inner city football league. But I stopped seeing color years ago. I tell people, you know, there are bad people in all walks of life, and it doesn't matter color of skin, ethnicity, whomever it is, you're going to have good and bad. Where we solve the problem is when we start to dialogue with one another. And when we start to realize the God in me is recognizing the God in you. And when we start with our kids and we start instilling good values that made this country great, a hard work ethic of you can make it by working hard, by being on time, by studying, by respecting yourself and other people, you know, by showing love, then good things happen. And like I said, it's unfortunate because none of us were there to witness what happened. And sometimes I wish there was a video camera, you know, to see the interaction that took place. The biggest key in this whole thing was when the person from the 9/11 dispatch told Zimmerman to stand down. And then you watch the news today, and I get infuriated that the lawyer says, well, that was only a suggestion from the 9/11 operator. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. You were told not to follow the kid.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you so much for sharing that, Jonathan, because one of the things is, you know, you talked about, you know, you being Jewish and how you've dealt with racism. And it's very, very important for our listeners to know and understand that discrimination goes beyond, you know, your skin color. It goes, we've been centuries been at war from the beginning of Genesis through Revelations. We have battled about religious views. We've battled about how someone eats, how someone drinks, how someone dresses. It's constantly a battle, a war going on to always dominate another individual from their will. And then here it is, we live in a society, unfortunately, we as African Americans live in society where we've been chained, just as the Jewish community has been chain, where we feel that we can't operate into the fact that we have to build our own little nucleus and try to function within those quarters of what the world and society has dictated to us. And it's got to stop. We have got to become the change. We've got to all stand up and say no more. We want to be judged by who we are and whose we are, not by what we wear or what we our religious views are, et cetera, et cetera. Any comment, Cheryl or Mark?
Hello? final comment, as I have to leave the call a little bit early, and I hate to do this because this call is so hot. And, I mean, we are really, really sharing some things. So thank you so much for that insight. And being able to hear it from you means a lot. Because when you talked about being Jewish, I immediately thought, when you go into a place, are people going to prejudge you or just judge you? See, there's a difference. They don't have time to evaluate whether or not you're a good Jew or a bad Jew, whether you're a Zionist or whether you are or whatever type of Jewish person that you might be. They don't have time to do this. Just as if you come into a place of business with your hoodie on, whether you like it or not, you are prejudged. And since we are prejudged within those first few seconds of someone seeing us, we have to be cognizant enough to teach our children how to make that first impression. You can only do that one time. And so you must put out the best foot forward that you possibly can. Now, that doesn't mean being fake. And that doesn't mean trying to not be cool or anything if you're a young person. What it means is that you have to be very careful as to the impression that you give people as to what your intentions may or may not be. So I feel very good to have heard your opinion about this, because without a well-rounded group, and Valerie, thank you so much for bringing such a well-rounded group to the table, without having a well-rounded group, we would only be hearing our side of the issue. I'm about to, right now as we speak, step into a primarily Jewish yacht club, and I find myself doing something like this. I have a ring on that has a crescent moon and a star symbolizing Islam. I have on my lapel a pin symbolizing Islam as well. I'm removing those because I know where I'm going. Do you understand? I'm not ashamed. And I'm not trying to be phony. I'm not ashamed of who I am and what I am and whose I am when I step into this yacht club that I'm about to go into right now. However, I do know that I have been trained to be able to be cognizant enough to dress a certain way when going in different people's homes or businesses and being in a different person's environment. And if this young man, if Trayvon had that training, I think that his father might have, I don't know, and you're right, we don't know what the circumstances were. None of us ever will. But I'm just speaking in general, general young people. If the general young people, in particular the African-American young people, are trained a little differently, I'm not going to say better, but a little differently, we would have a chance to have that dialogue that you're talking about, Jonathan, that dialogue that brings us closer together. And I thank you for that. And thank you, Valerie.
Thank you so much, Captain Mark, for sharing that. And I look forward to seeing you next month, May 19th, in Chicago at the Fight for Your Dreams tour.
Most certainly. I cannot wait to give you a hug and a kiss.
Much love.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Cheryl?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. You wanted to say something with Mark, but see?
Yes, my belief system is that when you change who you are to get acceptance from others, you're not being authentic. And I can speak from that because I have what people call a Afrocentric look with the long locks and the way I dress. And, you know, so I'm not concerned of how people accept me or look at me, you know. To give you an example, I'm also a certified legal nurse consultant. You know, we review cases for marriage for attorneys. And I was at the workshop one year, and this young lady asked me, do you think your hair keeps you from getting cases from attorneys. You know, and my response was, if the attorney doesn't want to hire me because of the way I wear my hair, then that's not the attorney I want to work for. You know, his concern should be, you know, do you have the expertise to help me to review this case and help me win my case? So that's how I live life, and that's the perspective I come from. But I'm also still believing in Dr. King's dream that one day we will all be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin.
Yeah, you know, my son wears locks, and he had an incident last year that I think was very discriminating against him. He had been teaching. And when it came down to go back to the same school he had been at for the past 2 years, they had changed officials at the screening. And this guy that was at the screening said to him that he shouldn't have been approved in the first place for the job. And he basically did not pass him or authorize him clearance to teach again. So he wound up, he was going back and forth, and he filed an appeal, and the appeal he filed went right to the person who turned him down in the first place. So he believed it was because of his hair. And then he said to me, he says, Mom, you know, the guy, when I walked up, he didn't like me at all. He says, I'm talking just like I normally talk. And he says, when I walked up, his face was like, well, what you want? What you doing here? And this was in, the guy was Hispanic. And he had a problem with my son. Now, he didn't get approval and clearance, so that meant that he couldn't teach in the whole county. So he had been, you know, contemplating relocating and going to another area. So he went to Tampa because he felt that that's where the Lord was leading him to go. He went to Tampa. He went through the screening, and he got hired all in one day. Whereas this person made him wait almost 3 weeks just to tell him no, he was not approved because of an incident that happened when he was a teenager. He was a minor. He was 14 years old, and which was, you know, sealed. This person felt that he needed to go and unseal that and bring it back up again, and said that he shouldn't be teaching because of the fact that, you know, when he was younger, he got into a fight, and he was not charged. It was dropped, but because it said adjudication was held, the person felt that it was strong enough for him to say no, but actuality, it was him being discriminated against. He went to the other school he's teaching. You check on the application. Have you ever, even though nothing ever happened in his adult life, it was when he was younger in school fighting. Like a lot of our young people do, fight. And they don't realize that there are repercussions if police are called to break up a fight. And so, therefore, there was no, and they were like, you got to be kidding me. The security people up there were like, this is nothing. You know, we've got worse than this, where adults have been arrested for domestic violence, and they're still working, they're still teaching. So it is a tough world we live in, but where does it stop? Where does it end? Where we say enough is enough, where it doesn't take away our right to be who we are. Lindy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Lindy,
I'm here. How are you?
Looking forward to seeing you in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Have you heard what we were talking about, and then how we go by discrimination? Now, Captain Mark left last week, and I know that you and him talked about the book that you were communicating about last week. Okay, we lost her.
Well, Val, if I can chime in real quick, you know where it stops when we when we get out of our own way, when the people that are in positions to make hiring decisions and accepting, you know, decisions for people to go to a certain school, certain college, when we get out of our own way and we start to judge people not on the way they look, not on the way they wear their hair, not on the way that they might, you know, speak sometimes, but on getting to know them and again, going back to recognizing the God in me, recognizing the God in you, and sitting down and saying, like in your son's case, obviously he was a good teacher because he was at the school for the previous 2 years.
Right.
Without incident, right?
Right.
Obviously he was qualified
for
the job.
They loved him. The teachers loved him. The principal of the school went to bed fighting for him. They're like, are you kidding me?
You get somebody in power that has their own agenda, their own belief system, and they don't check their ego at the door, and they have these preconceived notions. And they go to an extreme just because maybe the person on the other side of the desk felt threatened. That's where it stops. There's a movie, and I recommend everybody watch it. Remember the Titans.
Right.
And there's the scene with the player Bertier, and he's talking to the other gentleman, and he says, the only reason that I had any hatred towards you is because I didn't know you and I was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, where does this fear factor come in contact? You know, where does it end? It stops when you get, and it was an extreme situation. The coach took them together and they said, you're going to get along. Where does it stop when we look at examples like Brian Piccolo and Gale Sayers being roommates together when they played for the Chicago Bears?
Right.
When we look at friendship, when we look at these examples and we say, you know what? If I can walk into a football league that is predominantly black, and I, as a white guy, can be the PA announcer and make friends with the parents, the players, it takes people just stepping forward and saying, you know what? Let's put color aside. Let's put religion aside. Let's put ethnic background aside. Let's realize we're all human. And I'll put it in extreme terms. If you cut me, I bleed red. If we cut you, you bleed red. What part of the race? We're human. And it's unfortunate that Captain Mark has to take off his belief because he's walking into a Jewish yacht club. It's a yacht club. People are going there. It should be open to everyone. Same thing. Augusta, they host the Masters. I think they finally admitted, because the Supreme Court told them they had to, their first female member. And you know, when Tiger Woods won his first Masters, that year, if he wanted to be a member of Augusta, they would have turned him down. So where does it stop when people change their thoughts and say, you know what, we're going to let this person join because he adds something to the quality and value. We're going to stop judging people based on their hair, like what Cheryl said. You know, Cheryl, from just hearing you, I get the sense that you're a caring and loving and beautiful spirit. And Valerie, I've met, so and you know how I feel about you, Valerie. I don't have to tell your listeners, it's always a pleasure to be around you. You're always upbeat, and the lessons that you teach are amazing. But when we stop and we say, you know what, I'm not going to look beyond that person, I'm going to look into that person, and I'm going to realize that person is special, and that person brings something to the table that may be of value to everyone. And maybe that's what makes me unique, because I'll walk up to anybody and start talking to them.
Yes, to the point where
some people tell me get out of my store, or some people tell me I don't want to be bothered, or whatever the case is. That's where it ends. Where it ends is when people take down the guard a little bit and say, you know what? I'm going to, regardless of color, regardless of sexual orientation, regardless of religion, regardless of ethnicity, I'm going to go and get to know that person.
Absolutely. Lyndia?
Yes, good evening, everyone. I just want to say that I'm enjoying this discussion. And my take on the whole situation is, unfortunately, I have my master's in the field of communication, and I got it from a Catholic university, Trinity, in Washington, D.C. And I had a gay white professor, a very smart man who was the head of the chairman of the department. And several of us were African Americans, and he said so many times to us that if he was African American, he would be boycotting the news stations because it's broadcast on news all over America, bad things that happen in black communities, but it's no worse in black communities than it is in other communities. It's just on the news. In Washington, D.C., I give you a prime example. See, we believe whatever it is that's publicized. It's part of marketing. How many times you need to see a commercial before before you go to McDonald's? 13 times. You got to send the people a lot of letters. Well, every state I go in, when I'm on trips, the evening news is usually somewhere in the black community showing somebody's house being burned up, a lady outside with her hair standing on top of her head. The people looking like they don't have anything going on in their lives. It's just awful. And he said he would be boycotting because I talked about this last week about the book that Michelle Alexander wrote, professor, a black woman at Ohio State University, that talks about how right now today there are more African-Americans, and that includes men, women, and children, in prison today. It's the new Jim Crow than it was back in 1850 before slaves got set free, before the emancipation got set free, signed by President Lincoln. So all of us that don't have husbands, I went with Les to Lorton prison when Lorton was open right in Virginia, and he was going out there to speak. And I looked out there, and the men looked so wonderful. But she has researched, not just me, given out of philosophy. She has research in the new Jim Crow about all of these men that are being locked up all over America and why it is now a new Jim Crow. And I like to tell it because they don't go to white communities and lock white men up in disproportionate numbers. I'm not saying they don't lock them up, but in disproportionate numbers. If I make no mistake, African Americans are only 12% in this country, but yet the percentages of how many millions of African Americans are in prison, and I just wanted to say that. And then I'm a substitute teacher, and I go to high schools every day, and I see the kids in there with their dreads, and at first I was not sure what to think because I'm thinking when they get out of school and they go to get a job, they're going to need a haircut. But here in Washington, I see so many with the long hair and the dreads, and they have barbershops and beauty shops that make them look nice. They pay a lot of money to get them done and to get them cleaned and to get them styled. And then you even got some whites trying to get dreads, and you got white women trying to get braids. So all I can say is African-Americans are who we are. Our hair is not nappy. It's curly. It's just tighter curls than a white person's hair is. If you ever take a black person's hair when they get it cut, take it and pull it and see if that isn't that a curl. It's curly. But back in the slavery days, they named it kinky. They named it anything bad, anything gross, anything horrible. I worked at, I'm a project director for a national monument here in Washington, D.C., the African-American Civil War Memorial. And D.C. Councilman Frank Smith founded that, and he appointed me to serve. And he was a civil rights leader. He worked with Dr. Martin Luther King and SNCC and all of them. So although I wasn't a part of that, having worked with him now for 20 years, I can tell you all ought to know. I'm like Jack, who's now out of the box. I can't be put back in. I know my history as well. I had to go to the National Archives, and I know that there were 209,145 names of U.S. colored troops who fought in the American Civil War to help save the Union, which is why President Lincoln signed the bill. What we have to do is talk up the good things about African Americans and stop dwelling in the negativity, because you don't dwell in the negativity in the other communities. My son, who works as a seafood manager at Whole Food Market in one of the richest sections in the Washington community, Chevy Chase, Friendship Heights, the largest and the most exclusive Whole Food Markets in the D.C. area, he's the seafood manager. I had to really work with my son because he was talking about how he hates white people because of how they treat him. And I had to just let him know, just be polite to everybody. It's like Dr. Martin Luther King said, it's about people. And now he has gotten himself, he's 32 years old, he was young. He used to get locked up all the time for nothing. He never stayed in jail, but he would get locked up overnight for this, that, and the other because of black young men being harassed so much. So he developed a hatred against police. So now he tells me, after being at Whole Foods for 7 years, I don't never see no police over here in this community. They don't ride these streets. They don't sit around and see what's going on. They're not here. I can walk out to my car or to a bus or to the bank and never see a police. So all I'm telling you is, it's facts. It's not just me giving you all philosophy. If you don't believe it, pick up Michelle Alexander's book called The New Jim Crow and read the facts for yourself. And then a lot of the black men that get out of jail got to go right back, because when they get out, they can't get a job because they're considered a felon. When they get out, they can't live in the housing projects because it's not allowed. They can't get food stamps. They can't get any substance, any government assistance to help them while they try to get a job. How are they going to get a job when you're a felon? And some of us out here, that not even felons can't even get a job with the advent of the internet. So I'm sorry, you all. I could go on and on, because I'm ready to start acting like Dr. Martin Luther King about this situation and bring it to the forefront, because it's way too much. It's more than just one thing. It's a whole lot of stuff that's going on in the black community. Instead of us bringing up and rising up all the African Americans that are doing wonderful things. Look at me. I was married and went back to college and couldn't afford to go to school, and finally figured out how to get student loans after all these years being from North Carolina, growing up on a farm, picking cotton, and parents couldn't send me to college. Like a lot of us, I'm not unusual. But I finally, at 45, went to Trinity University and got my BA degree. And then I went back at it and got my master's at 55, and now I'm 60 years old. And I want to do just like Louise Hay. She started a whole new thing at the age of 60. And so all I can tell you is, I don't care because I'm 60. I'm just getting ready to get started.
Woo, I like that. So
that's my take on the subject. I know it's a big picture for me.
Hey, Valerie. Probably 10 years ago, I read the book The Four Agreements, and maybe some of you have heard of that book by Miguel Ruiz. And if a lot of us would live by these agreements, we would have not a stress-free life. The first one is, be impeccable with your words. And I'll just read them right quickly. It says, speak with integrity. Say only what you mean. Avoid using the word to speak against yourself or to gossip about others. Use the power of your word in the direction of truth and love. And number two is the one that I love, that I live by. Don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. What others say and do is a projection of their own reality, their own dream. When you are immune to the opinions and actions of others, you won't be the victim of needless suffering. And on that one, we have a saying in therapy, what other people think of me is none of my business. So that's kind of the one I like to live by. The third one is don't make assumptions. Find the courage to ask questions and to express what you really want. Communicate with others as clearly as you can to avoid misunderstanding, sadness, and drama. With just one agreement, you can completely transform your life. And the fourth one is always do your best. Your best is going to change from moment to moment. It will be different when you are healthy as opposed to when you are sick. Under any circumstance, simply do your best, and you will avoid self-judgment, self-abuse, and regret. So I incorporate those principles in my life.
Wow, that was powerful. What book is that, Cheryl?
It's called The Four Agreements by Miguel, M-I-G-U-E-L, Ruiz, R-U-I-Z.
Thank you. That was powerful. Lyndia, we'll be seeing you in a couple of days. How can people get a hold of you, those that can't come to the Fight for Your Dreams event on Friday?
Well, they can visit my website at www.lyndiagrant.com, L-Y-N-D-I-A-G-R-A-N-T, lyndiagrant.com, and call 202-518-3192. And I hope you all can come, because we're going to be talking about follow the yellow brick road and go for your dreams. Get on the
Absolutely.
Road to success. I'm ready to just talk about the good things that we all out here doing. And forget about all this negative. And I know we can't stop it, but we can raise the banner for the good stuff that's going on. That's what I'm interested in.
Absolutely. We got to begin somewhere. Jonathan Lehman, are you still there?
I am here, and I wanted to, again, applaud everybody for their viewpoints. And I wanted to thank Cheryl for sharing the four agreements. Don Miguel Ruiz wrote a new book, called The Fifth Agreement, and something to pick up. And I wanted also, Cheryl, when we build things up, I am very well versed in history as well, and I remember the story of the Tuskegee Airmen. And, that's, I think, what we need in all communities. We need to start building everything up, and
that's
we need to start at a young age. You know, when the kids enter kindergarten, whatever school they're at, make them feel important. Make them feel helpful and hopeful, and take this stigma of hopelessness away. And it is a shame that here we are in 2012, and there are great accomplishments being made by people all over. And I admire, one of my favorite athletes, unfortunately, since passed, was Florence Griffith Joyner. She revolutionized track and field. For those that don't know, she was the one that started running in the one-legged unitard, and she was a beautiful, beautiful woman. That's what we need to start celebrating. We need to start celebrating the accomplishments, the greatness. Chris Rock makes a joke. He says, in my neighborhood, you get more respect when you come out of prison than if you come out of college. We need to start putting education out there that it is achievable, that when you do the right thing and celebrate doing the right thing, and when somebody does something wrong, don't write them off. Give them a second chance. Let them learn. We learned that today. Ozzie Guillen made a major, major faux pas in saying what he said about Fidel Castro. Just something he shouldn't have said. It created up a whole storm, and he since apologized or whatever, and it's been the highlight of the sports news. But what about celebrating all those kids that are out there doing the right thing, that are playing the sports, that are volunteering in their community at the soup kitchens, that are collecting canned goods, that are raising money through Relay for Life, that are volunteering at the Ronald McDonald House? So where's the news media to highlight the work that's being done by a lot of the national black fraternities and sororities like Kappa Sig and Kappa Alpha and all that?
That's what I was That's what I was just saying, sir. They won't send cameras for that. But as soon as they hear about a shooting or a fire, that's where the cameras are going. They come running.
Right.
And so it goes all the way back to the slavery days, unfortunately.
And we can change that with the advent of YouTube and social media and all that. If you're part of these organizations that are primarily black organizations and you're doing good work in your community, videotape it. Let people know this is what we're doing to change the perception of everything. Because I applaud the work that, you know, the Kappas do. I see these women. They're amazing women. They're incredible, incredible women. And they've raised thousands upon thousands of dollars nationwide for charities like muscular dystrophy, diabetes research, American Cancer Society. And again, where is the media to say, there's more good going on in the world than bad. Check this out. Look at this group of women and what they did.
But can't you understand why the rest of the world look at African Americans in such a negative way? That's all I'm saying. It's just because of what they see on the news and in the papers all the time. It's just so horrible. So that's
and
where
I,
the biggest
I agree.
Part
and I
of
think,
the problem
I,
is.
You know, from my perspective, it's... I think it starts with the promotion of the good things that are going on. I had a great experience with the Lauderhill Broncos last year, being their announcer, and they invited me to do their homecoming. And it was interesting because I told them to make me a plate, and they said, you eat collard greens? And I said, yeah, I eat collard greens. And they were amazed.
That's a Jewish person eat collard greens.
But let me just say, sir, I just want to say on that subject, we can send out the news media for good things we're having, but it's not often that we can get picked up like here in Washington, the Washington Post. I know because I did a lot in public relations even before I got my master's. I was the coordinator, executive director for a festival in Washington called the Georgia Avenue, the annual Georgia Avenue Day Festival and Parade. The Washington Post, finally, after me doing it, I did it for 15 years, me and my sisters. The Washington Post wrote one of the late years before I stopped doing it that over 100,000 people come. Every year I can look for an article being in the Washington Post, but it was because a lady that worked at Channel 7 got with me to tell me how to do it. She was on our committee, and she showed me how to lobby and how to get the article. But it was an event that, because it was so huge, they couldn't ignore it. But there's some things that we do that are also valuable that we don't get, and I would have to work really hard every year to make sure the story was good and the photograph, because it would be a parade, and the mayor and the politicians, everybody in town pretty much was there. The Washington Redskins, marching bands, Howard University, University of Maryland, it was all types of people in the parade that went all the way down 7 miles, the beginning of Georgia Avenue, all the way down to Howard, and then there would be a festival at two locations, across from Howard and up Georgia Avenue at another location. But right. I was executive director. I had to raise all the funds, and I did all the publicity, would be on the radio, would be on TV, and would get all of my co-chairs and politicians on news and everything.
We got
really publicized it. Okay. So I was just saying, we do a lot of good stuff, and they'll do it if it's really big, but some of it that's worthy, they won't come, because I've been doing it since, but they won't do it unless it's huge.
Well, we're wrapping up.
They couldn't ignore that.
Topics from the Soul, and I'm your host, Valerie Parker. Please visit our website, www.fromthesoulofawoman.com, and also those of you that have friends or family in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area, they can come out or they can call me at 954 954- 724-0900 to get further information on how they can attend the Fight for Your Dreams tour April 13th at 7 p.m. at the Sheraton, Washington North. Thank you so much, Cheryl Mix, Lyndia Grant, and Jonathan Lieberman for joining. And we look forward to seeing you next Tuesday on Hot Topics from the Soul. Tell a friend. Thank you and have a great night. Bye-bye.